finally, she, the 2014 Benjamin Aranda III Award winner. Commissioner Sue Alexander reporting on two counties, Amador and Glenn.
Thank you. On July 21st, I spent the day at the Amador Court. I met primarily with the presiding Judge Susan Harlan and the CEO, Barbara Cockerham. I also met with Judge Hermanson, the other judge in that court. It's a two-judge court. And the relatively new commissioner, research attorney, habeas corpus specialist, they combined all those, Renee Day, and some of the staff. Unfortunately, things are pretty dismal in Amador. They have 27 and a half staff with two anticipated retirements this year and insufficient funds to pay out their accrued benefits. This is down from 36. With the new budget, they will be able to fill one position. This reduction is exacerbated by the fact that 40% of their staff have some kind of accommodation, ranging from leaves of absence to limited hours to work limitations. Because of this, most employees are doing double duty and they can't keep up. There's only one manager and one supervisor in addition to the CEO, and they work significant overtime. There are boxes of files that have work to be completed. This includes completing minutes, doing filings, and responding to document requests. The estimate is they are about a year behind in all non-crucial matters. The courtroom and office staff work together to try to keep the urgent matters up to date, and then they focus on matters that are set for hearing and assisting customers who come to the windows or make phone calls. Every staff person should be a generalist, but they have insufficient time or energy to complete cross-training. It's difficult to get caught up due to interruptions. The public is noticing because there are unintended consequences due to the delays that are now being felt by the public. While I was speaking to one of the staff members, she had to respond to three phone inquiries in a period of about 5 minutes. The staff I spoke to has been there for up to 20 years and has never seen it this bad. They have already closed the window at 3:30 on Mondays through Thursdays and noon on Friday and are considering reducing window and telephone hours even further. This is especially hard for a court that was innovated, having previously received three CLEPS awards. Amador is proud of the accomplishments they've made in the past year. They began their enhanced collection unit in April of this year and hopes it will have the positive benefit that it's had for the other courts. They've been able to accommodate the police department with an e-warrant system and are using an e-delivery system for document requests. This saves them, the justice partners, and the public time and money. In May, the civil assessment process was reorganized for traffic, which eliminated court appearances, and in July, they quit sending courtesy notices. They have also converted their internet and phone services to DSL. That was an upgrade. The staff is very dedicated, but morale is low, not only because the workload, but they don't see a light at the end of the tunnel, but also because the staff is doing this with less take-home pay. They have not received a raise since 2010, and under the newly negotiated contract, they will be paying more towards retirement, the full 7% by October, to have two unpaid holidays, and increase their health insurance premiums, along with the court paying a smaller percentage of the family health insurance package. This was after a year of 18 furlough days, which was down from 20-something the year before. As we've heard from other courts, some staff can no longer afford their living expenses, and some have lost their homes. The situation would be more hopeful if there was an expectation that this was short-term. With the ongoing years of cuts and limitations and the fund balance of 1%, Amador has hit the proverbial wall and sees no relief in the near future. They needed a loan to make payroll. They are hoping to share some key staff with Calaveras and maybe other neighboring courts, but Calaveras can't make any decisions because they're in the middle of a judicial election in November where both of their judicial positions are up for election, both are being contested, and they have an interim CEO. So that keeps Amador in a holding pattern. They still haven't found a permanent family court service manager or court investigator, and the retired annuitant, who is currently filling in on contract, really wants to retire. If AB 2332 passes, they won't be able to fill that position anymore with a contract person, and they can't find anybody that wants the job. They would also like to refill their HR position, which is currently covered by Ms. Cockerham. With the accommodations request and the two pending lawsuits, this has been challenging. Partly, it's a culture change for Amador. When there was more money and staff, Amador was able to assist employees with job modifications and leave requests, and that level of understanding was expected. Now the court can't accommodate those leaves and work restrictions, and it's difficult for anyone to implement these stricter limitations. The court has a generally good relationship with their justice partners. The draft program has improved the quality of dependency counsel, but there's no money for counsel for minors and family law matters. They also are having issues with realignment, since the county's jails' mental health services are significantly less than those at the state prison. They also have no mental health hospital in their county, so they have no mental health assessments that can be done in a timely manner. Cases involving inmates with mental health issues are being continued for up to 4 to 6 months. There are a couple of systemic issues that could be addressed by the council that would help Amador and other small counties in similar situations. First, they feel the staffing is a staffing study used in Waltham. Other similarly situated courts seem to have a larger staff allocation. Waltham also doesn't take into account the technology limitations of any particular court, so courts with better technology have the same equivalent staff as those with limited technology. There is also no consideration for extended leaves and workplace accommodations. Larger courts cannot handle a 40% accommodation either, but in smaller courts it takes a lot less people to get to that number. Also, GIPSA's data needs to be more uniform since it's a factor in determining staffing needs. With fund balances limited to 1%, they can't backfill positions, so their needs for adjusting staff for unanticipated medical leaves are almost non-existent. There needs to be a way to fund the filling of these positions or expanding the staff needs to cover these contingencies. An example would be to allow for a floater position for one position per so many employees. The bigger elephant is the disparity in case management systems and technology infrastructure between the courts. Amador, like El Dorado and some other courts, have an antiquated system. They are still on Windows XP, which is no longer being maintained. They have insufficient funds to contract for a new system. Because their equipment is at, Jim would know this better, end of life stage, they had an analysis done of what it would take to upgrade both their hardware and software, and it came in at $826,000. Their operating balance, fund balance, was $175,000. They used that money to add a jury box to one of their departments. They had a new courthouse built a while ago in a county building that already existed, and so they had to fit into the space that was already there. So one of their courtrooms didn't have a jury box, so they added a jury box. They did provide a small stipend to their employees for them assuming these unanticipated new expenses, and they started building the infrastructure for technology upgrades. But most of it they considered Band-Aids. As an example, Amador is one of only two courts whose system is on the DMV Cortex. They have been warned that they will lose access unless they upgrade. They use some of their fund balance, more than they anticipated, to upgrade, but there still are some issues to be resolved. Without access, Amador cannot properly determine fines, as they cannot access priors. They cannot distribute fines and fees, and notify DMV manually of court outcomes, which may lead to unintended consequences to the public. Since they process over 600 citations per month, they had to address this issue immediately. They anticipate additional issues as justice partners and agencies upgrade and Amador Court can't keep up. Until they can, they continue to function manually. Another thing they do manually is they write notes to notify the sheriff of when the next inmate's appearance is. What they really need is a new system, but not just for them, but something that ties them to other courts and justice partners. They need to be able to e-file, scan records to eliminate their storage and recovery needs, portals for DMV, CHP, Department of Social Services, DCSS, and other state and local agencies. They currently use an off-site storage, which they shared with Calaveras, but since Calaveras completed their courthouse, Calaveras no longer needs the storage, so Amador is now stuck with the full bill. They also need an improved phone system, but they don't have the resources. When they researched e-filing, it would require updating existing system components, which, if done in a piecemeal fashion, are more costly and time-consuming than implementing in a comprehensive fashion. They hope to partner with other courts to have a consortium where they could share not only the technology, but the staffing, maintenance, and other related services. However, neither Amador nor the courts they would logically partner with have the necessary resources. Amador proposes that the Judicial Council develop a technology fund similar to the Court Facilities Fund, a source of revenue that would need to be obtained, and I noticed the report yesterday said when revenue becomes available, As facility modifications, court can make requests and determinations would be made for priorities. It would take time, but at least over time it would level the playing field between the various court regarding technology capabilities. Until this happens, they're not sure what they're going to do when they have a technology system that isn't functioning. Later that week, I went to the Glenn Court. Things are a little bit better in Glenn, but not much. On July 24th, I met with their PJ, Peter Tweed, and their APJ, Don Burr, along with their CEO, Jeanette Bartlett, and the Chief Financial Officer, Julie Leach. Like many courts, Glenn used their fund balance to contract with Tyler for a case management system. They are in a consortium with several other small courts, which include Lassen, Alpine, Calaveras, Yuba, Sutter, and Tehama. They are working together and very cooperatively, I might add. Each court is required to have their own contract with Tyler. This has limited other courts from joining the consortium, but has not reduced the cost per court. The initial plan had been that one court, Tehama, was going to take the lead and become the pilot. Now that they have more courts joining their consortium, they're going to deploy in two phases, one in October of this year and the second in February of 2006. I'm sorry, one in October of 2015 and the second in February of 2016. Glenn is going to deploy in the second phase. They chose to wait because of a courthouse construction project. The consortium has a committee which has been determined best practices for implementation so that all the participating court will have similar processes that will benefit them and their justice partners. There are still some glitches like GPSIS reporting, proper reporting of distributions and fines, and DMV data storage that need to be worked out. Unfortunately, Glenn's fund balance will not cover all the deployment costs, so they will need to use trial court funding to finish the project. Glenn now shares an IT person with Butte County, who is not on the same timeline to convert to Tyler. They will need different tech support and no funds for staffing for technology to implement scanning and e-filing, which are essentials to go paperless or paper on demand. There is also a time commitment, about 40% of a court manager's time to work on the project. Glenn, along with several other courts, worked very hard on a budget change proposal for a technology fund. Priority would have been given to courts that were working collaboratively. All the courts were completed surveys and participated in phone interviews, which were quite time-consuming. The Judicial Council approved the budget change proposal, but it was eventually denied, which was very discouraging to these courts. Glenn also transferred a large portion of their fund balance to the architectural fund to be held for the furnishings they will need when their construction project is finished. Glenn has been approved to add onto their existing courthouse in Willows for two courtrooms, which will result in closing the Orland Courthouse and the satellite offices having all functions at the Willows Courthouse. The construction is due to begin in July or August of 2015 and will last for 18 months to 2 years. The state has a modular courthouse, which is currently being used in Yolo County, that should be available by the time Glenn needs it. Though space will be at a premium, the county's agreed to place the modular unit on an empty lot across the street from the current courthouse, which is a better plan than taking other county space that was being used for other functions. Since the building fund only covers one move, and they have to move out of their existing building and then move back into it when the construction's done, part of the fund balance was need to return for the return move and furnishings. They were hoping to complete a file destruction project prior to the move, but haven't the requisite funding or staff, so they'll be moving all their files twice. With the 1% fund balance limit, Glenn had to borrow money to make payroll. Sounds like I've heard that before. Their budget is still insufficient to meet their needs. Their enhanced collections are keeping them afloat. Cluster 1 courts were historically underfunded and remain so. The budget is insufficient to cover salaries and benefits for the number of staff allocated. They are allocated 26 staff but can only fund 21. Of those, they are down 4 and hope to fill 2 of the positions, but with the current budget, they're not sure they'll be able to do so. Training is a challenge with limited staff because there's no time to focus on a new employee, so that person shadows and watches staff, which makes the training take longer. It also makes it harder for employees to transfer to new positions if they want to improve themselves. When they had fund balances, they were able to borrow from one area to assist another. A prime example is the 1058 grant and the facilitator grant. They had overspent these two categories by $55,000 and $13,000 respectively for the past couple of years. Because of enhanced collections, they were able to bank a few bucks to cover these kinds of things, but with the 1%, they will be forced to seriously reduce the hours of the facilitator and seriously impact the assistance provided to the commissioner. They need those funds for mediation, court investigations, for probate, and step-parent adoptions. They also will still have cash flow problems with the 1058 program. The money arrives promptly when it's the basic grant, but when they get to the federal drawdown, it slows down dramatically. They are now at 4 months and counting. Right now, civil and family law are hurting, criminal is keeping pace, but they expect that to change when the new DA takes office in January. The current DA filed more felonies. This is a two-judge court. They did 30 jury trials last year and 18 so far this year, but few misdemeanors. They anticipate an increase in misdemeanors, which will decrease jury needs, but increase the number of cases filed and the resulting workload on criminal clerks and courtroom staff. One way to meet the increasing need on staff is to close service windows earlier and limit hours that the phones are answered. They will be closing service windows at 3 o'clock once appropriate notices can be given. As with many small courts, there are logistical challenges. They have to coordinate cases requiring interpreters and maximize the use of their available temporary court reporters. There have also been issues with confirming that the interpreters on language line are properly certified. They primarily rely on pro tems for small claims and traffic and are lucky that there are a few non-stips and appeals. Glenn is happy with the support they receive from other courts and the judicial council staff. For example, they contract with Riverside to handle RFPs, which saves them a large amount of time and money, especially with the new requirements of the public contracting laws. Sacramento provides research attorneys, which they are very happy with because they were accurate and prompt. The legal team at the Judicial Council was very helpful and timely with contract reviews. They use the Phoenix system for payables and just started using it for banking. And they feel Saranis is a good resource, especially since to save money, they are reducing their on-site libraries. What they didn't like was a 66-page survey from the state audits. It wasn't so much the length, but if they answered the lead question no, there was no way to state the sub-questions were not applicable, and the system required an answer when an appropriate answer wasn't an option. Human resources have been helpful and pleasant, especially with labor negotiations. They just negotiated a two-year contract with their employees, which will now contribute 4% to retirement, and increase that to 8% in August of 2015. The employees got a 2% raise, so it's still a net loss to them. Because of this, part of the fund balance was used to give employees a one-time stipend to help defray these expenses. But quality and morale is bad, each employee doing more with less, both less time and less money. Glenn would love to keep the 2% emergency fund, money that goes to the emergency fund in the court, but they also believe they need the emergency fund or something of that kind. For example, one Monday, the staff came in to find that their server room had overheated. It could have been disastrous, and they would have had no monies to replace those servers. Glenn agrees with Amador that there needs to be some method for planning for technology upgrades, such as server refreshing, telecommunication upgrades, justice partner portals, and the like. Glenn also thinks that funds need to be allocated to the facility's modification staff, so better planning can be done to anticipate predictable failures, which results in huge savings costs instead of doing things piecemeal. That's my final report, and what the basic information I got from the small courts, because all of my courts are small courts, is they really appreciate the liaison program. They think the voice of the small courts has been heard better, and they believe that the liaisons are depicting what is happening in the small courts.
Justice Hall?
Chief, thank you. I don't have a question on Commissioner Alexander's reports or any of the other reports, but as I sit here and listen to the reports both today and the reports we have at every meeting, with the exception of a few points of light, it continues to be a parade of horribles. And I'm just wondering if we have, perhaps Judge Jarre can tell me, if we have any vehicle for reducing these reports to writing, reports such as the one Commissioner Alexander just gave us that say people are losing their homes under the circumstances, and at least providing those, whether they're paid attention to or not, providing those to the legislative leadership and the governor's office to put a daily real-life picture before them as to what this, what remains drastically reduced funding, is doing to our courts every day. I know there's efforts by all sorts of people, Bench Bar Coalition, State Bar, but I would like to see this information that we get provided to our sister branches in whatever effective way we can.
Judge Jarre, then Mark Robinson.
Yes, Justice Hall, of course, Corey Jasperson in Governmental Affairs developed the snapshot process on a court-by-court basis to alert relative to reductions in access. And there is, I believe, a process by which council members reduce their oral reports to writing, and I think your recommendation is well taken, and I'll review that with staff to see if they can be in some way synopsized for other purposes.
Thank you. I will just add, I'm sure the snapshots that the Office of Governmental Affairs provides are useful, but these recitations of our liaison visits are so personal, are so detailed, are so pertinent to the day-to-day operation of the courts that are struggling, that I would like to see this detail be provided in the other branches.
Mark?
We get these liaison reports approximately one time a quarter. And maybe it's 1 hour of what's going on in the courts in California. It's great to type it up and give it to the governor's office or to the legislature, but I don't think that's going to do a lot, because they're reading paperwork all the time. What about a 1 hour, a quarter meeting with the governor or Michael Cohen, giving them the same reports verbally? Because the effect that these reports have on you when you're listening to them is much different than when you read them. I'd love to see at least one time a year, maybe 1 hour a year, where the governor could hear five or six of these reports. But maybe Michael Cohen or Diane Cummings would listen to this more than one time a year. And we're talking an hour and 15 minutes out of 2,000 hours that they're putting in for a year. And they're choosing and they want to manage the funding of this court system. I think they should hear what we hear today and what we've heard here for the last year with these liaison court reports. So that's my thought.
Justice Baxter.
Yeah, just to tag on to Mark's comments, I think something that's even more effective, I've seen so many major policy initiatives generated within the legislature or within the governor's office, when the report is not so much a direct report, but when it's on the headlines of the LA Times or the Chronicle, to the extent that we could provide factual information to the news media as to the effect of budget cuts statewide, I think that's really when the legislative leaders will focus on the current situation that the judicial branch is experiencing. How we do that, I don't know.
This is Justice Miller. Can I just say something in response to that?
Please. Go ahead.
Already working with Peter Allen through our office.
Louder, please. Louder.
We are already working through the Office of Communications through Peter Allen, and we are videotaping these, and we send them to different news outlets when they request and also on our own. So in some sense, what Justice Baxter suggested is a great idea, and Peter and them have been doing that.
Thank you. And I know also we can always improve in our efforts to get the story out, but I also know that we do try to get these folks to kind of come to the Assembly Committee hearings so they can tell in their own words, and frankly that's been very effective. We can always do more, and we do need to get more real stories in front of the decision makers and in the governor's office. We always strive to, and we actually go and ask certain entities to give us stories that we can bring to the press's attention, and also folks who can tell their stories. So this is all very helpful as we move forward, because there is a misconception out there that $223 million has cured the court's problems. Mary Ann, or Judge O'Malley?
Thank you, Chief.
after having read the coverage of the courts over many, many, many years, unfortunately, what we've just discussed amongst ourselves is not very sexy, it's not very exciting, it's depressing and it's sad, and, you know, it's not the byline or the headline that, unfortunately, we've been reading about. They'd rather print about small little quips and controversies within the branch rather than the real needs of the branch. And so, you know, when staff are losing their homes, you know, they'd rather discuss some silly little fight that's going on between, you know, some entities. And so I can only hope that those in the press see the real dire, real life stories that are presented here. And if you want a story, that's a story, not the other stuff. So I can only hope that when they hear this or when those articles are sent to them by Peter Allen, who I know is working tirelessly to put out the true message of the court and courts and what's really happening, that they actually read that, take the time and listen to it and see that there is valid, real life tragedy and story there as opposed to what it is that I've been forced to read about the last couple of years.
Judge Rosenberg.
I may be wrong, but I've sometimes wondered if there are some out there who want to see the branch hit bottom. And I think part of the reason that we haven't seen an explosion is because of the dedication of the employees and the judicial officers who remain. I mean, we're completely understaffed on judicial officers. Our trial courts have lost 20, 25, 30% and more of their employees. And we haven't seen the explosion because these people are working overtime. They're working really, really hard with no pay raises year after year. In fact, pay cuts when you count all the benefit cost increases. You know, hours get reduced, things get delayed. But that's kind of on the periphery of the reality of what we're seeing. So, you know, our dedication has managed to keep us afloat. And I hope, as Judge O'Malley indicates, that the press and others do some real investigation on the street in places like Amador County about what's really happening in our courthouses around the state.
Thank you. All true, all articulate, and sad.